Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I have an amazing episode for you today. I really think you're going to like it. I speak with Inner Circle member Tanya, and we speak about a lot. For example, she had a number of great questions ranging from, is muscle memory real, to should women be taking creatine, especially if their main goal is fat loss, and also how do you design a well-designed strength training program? What factors go into a well-designed strength training program? And we speak about all of that and much more. We also talk all about Tanya's progress, because Tanya has a really remarkable story. We actually spoke a couple of months ago, just over 2 months ago, and in our first conversation, Tanya told me how she was an athlete growing up, she became a soldier, and then just over the course of life, she actually ended up gaining about 100 pounds. When she was pregnant, she was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, and she's overcome a tremendous amount. And in this episode, we speak about all of the progress she's been making, how she's been able to improve her consistency, improve her nutrition, improve her training, and what she's going to plan to do moving forward. I think you're going to like this episode a lot. If you do, please leave a 5-star review. They've been helping a ton. And if you want to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes. Let's get into it. Tanya, how are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
I'm good. So listen, first and foremost, thank you for being okay with the delay last time and then today. So I was just at jiu-jitsu, and my coach is great, but he's one of those great people who he'll just talk and talk. Mm-hmm. And even though he knows you have to go, even though you give all of the social cues, being like, oh, you start sort of walking backwards, like you sort of turn your frame sideways, like giving all of the social cues, being like, yeah, I gotta go. Even saying like, hey, I have an appointment at 3. He's like, oh yeah, you'll be out of here by 3. No problem. I was like, no, I have an appointment at 3. Like I need to be there at 3. He's like, yeah, you'll be good. And I'm like, it's one of the things where you slowly, like you leave, you open the door, but he follows you. Yeah. I'm like, I gotta go, man. So sorry about that. Finally got away.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
How are you? How is everything?
I'm good. Really excited to talk. We actually just got back from jiu-jitsu too. My son is doing private lessons.
Nice.
So he just started today. So I took some notes and I'm really excited to
What's
see that
his
kind
first
of
day?
He's been doing a class, like a MMA kind of class. It's mixed between BJJ and Krav Maga, and he's
wow.
really liking BJJ. So the club that he goes to is part of 10th Planet. So we've been
kind of
obsessing over all of it, you know, watching 10th Planet videos every day and getting
They're
him
incredible.
Excited. And yeah, so we got him private lessons because he is super tall. He's 12, but he's 5'9".
Lord.
No, he's a monster, and you know we're trying to get him
he's
you know
five,
they want him
12 years old.
Yes So I know he's gonna be a beast if he sticks with. I mean, he's a beast already, but you know, we're doing the private lessons for him because they want him to go up to the adult class just because of his size. Like right now the range is like, you know, 8-year-olds to 12-year-olds, but he's like towering over all
yeah.
of them.
He's just
so they wanted
too,
you know,
dangerous.
Get him to the adult class. yeah. So yeah, and you know, we did that private lesson, and I'm super stoked because now I want to do it. I've always wanted to do it, but now I really want to do it.
Oh, so. Let's go! Do you think you're gonna start?
Well, it's part of the things I want to talk to you about with everything that's been going on. But I talked to the instructor, and I said, he's like, "When are you gonna come?" And I said, "I really want to, but I want to be able to do like a certain part, like a certain functional movements before being
okay.
able to get in." So like, because I know me, like mentality wise like if I'm gonna go, I'm gonna go,
yeah,
and I'm gonna
yeah.
go hard. But like, you know, I want to be able to effectively like do some movements. Like I tried some of the movements on my husband like watching the class a couple weeks ago, and it was a shit show. I was like, all right, I don't know if I'm ready for this. So I was like, okay, I'm going to wait a couple more weeks, months, however long, but I definitely want to do it.
That's fair. And that's cool. It gives you a movement-based goal to work towards that you can, is very measurable. Be like, cool, when I can do this, then I'm ready, I can go, which is exciting. You have a movement-based objective goal. Once you do this, and I don't know what they are, but we can talk about it, then you can go. So that's exciting. I love that.
Yeah, thanks. Super excited.
So do me a favor, before we dive in, give me a recap of where we left off last time and sort of what you're struggling with, what we spoke about, and then talk to me about how you've been just kicking dicks in the dirt. And in your words, by the way, not mine.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I lost
so
it
much.
When I saw it. Oh, I've never heard that phrase, but I'm going to use it from now on.
Did you ever listen to The Fighter and the Kid before?
I've never heard.
Brendan Schaub and...
Oh, yeah.
That's one of Brendan Schaub's, like, go-to phrases is, like, we're not dicks in the dirt. But, like, I used to be a huge fan of Brendan, but now it's, like, this running joke in our family. So we just say that all the time. We're just like, we're not dicks in the dirt.
I didn't put that together. Got it. Okay, yeah. That's a great podcast. Like...
Yeah.
So, all right. So you tell me what's been going on.
Okay. So last podcast, you know, we left off and you told me to do the 3 plates, 2 snack method. And my goal was to swim 3 to 4 times a week and maintain my 6 to 8 step count range. My homework was also to watch the 3 plates, 2 snack method on the Inner Circle app, which I did. And it was awesome. It was very informative. Loved it. So we spoke on May 19th, which was like, I think 70-ish days ago. Yep. And after our podcast, I was super insanely motivated and I did nothing. I was like so jacked up. You know, I mean, we just had gotten done moving and family was coming back to back on weekends. So I was kind of like, you know, recovering from that. And so then I saw, like, I actually took this consistency calendar seriously in June, and like the first week of June was nothing but O's, and I was like really pissed off. So
what happened? Why was it nothing but O's?
Well, because I just didn't do anything. I think it was because, like, between moving and then family and then like, you know, and swimming was my goal, but it was also like, it rains all the time here. So it's like, that's kind of a dumb goal. I'm like rain, like I'm swimming in the rain and I'm like, okay, like, you know, and then you talk yourself out of swimming. Cause it's like, you got to swim, then you got to shower. So you're just wet all the time. And it's like a drag, you know, anyways. So I was just taking all these excuses up in my head. And I was like, you know what, screw this plan. I'm just going to start the Inner Circle at Home body weight challenge. Cause, you know, like body weight, that should be easy. It was not easy.
Brutal.
It was absolutely brutal. So, but I did 3 weeks of it and I was really excited. So I finished June with 57% consistency, which was like, meh. It was like, okay.
It's significantly better than before.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was like pretty jacked up about that. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to hit July, you know, hit the ground running. So I continued the at-home bodyweight program, but my son's gym has personal training there, and they do MMA-based functional workouts. So I have a trainer, and I do those workouts. So I started that actually in June. So I've been training 5 days a week, so 2 times a week with a trainer, and then 3 times a week. Which are like 30-minute workouts. They describe them as fast twitch workouts, slow twitch workouts, and then I do cardio kickboxing. Mm-hmm. And then the other two are with my trainer, so they're like, you know, strength based, full body, all that good stuff. So I'm still kind of learning what I'm doing. I'm doing the things, but I'm trying to like understand, because I like full picture, you know, like. And I'm reading all these things about, you know, split. So it looks like we're doing a split, arms and core, legs and core. We are definitely doing progressive overload. So it looks like we're adding 10 pounds a week. We measured my baseline. I think it was the first day. So first day was Olympic bar and we were doing power cleans, front loaded squats and military presses. And then dumbbells, you know, I've been increasing, I think, 5 pounds every week. So I'm on week 4 of a 12-week program.
Okay.
And I'm super jacked because I'm ending the month of July with 88% consistency,
Let's go.
Wow.
And I love this so much because I'm like so jacked up, but I'm down 16 pounds.
Yes, I am.
And I'm down 16 inches. This is where it gets crazy.
Shut up.
I'm like so, I got a good cry thinking about like, about it. Cause it's been fun. It's been so much fun. I mean, it's been brutal, but it's been fun. But like the super cool ones that I really like, I lost 8 inches between both legs. So my legs alone are just like completely different. And then 5 inches around my waist. So I was like, okay, this is great. Cause I'm fitting in things that I couldn't pull over like a month ago. And
oh my gosh.
And I'm super jacked up. Like I just
should be. That's unbelievable.
Thanks. And I'm just, I don't know. I'm in a really good place. And now this is where Tanya needs to come back down from her cloud nine because I do get super jacked, but then I go hard. And then that's where I want to like make sure I double check with you about things that I'm doing because in my brain, I'm like, I'm an athlete, but then my body is like, hey, don't go, save me, you know, like, don't kill me yet. So yeah, that's pretty much where, what I've been doing and where I'm at. So.
So, well, that's incredible in every sense of the word. I'm beyond impressed. I really hope that you're appreciating how hard you've worked, how much progress you've made. The consistency is just, that's what I'm stoked about because that's what drives all of the other progress. Mm-hmm. To see you go from like the whole first week being O's to then like 58% consistency to then like in the 80% like that's almost 90% consistency. Like that's insane. And I think it would have been so easy for anybody after that, like first whole week of just O's, just be like, ah, screw it. Right. Like it would have been so much, the easier choice would have been screw it. That would have been easier, but you're like, no, like you didn't use that as a justification to stop. You're like, no, time to like really put my nose to the grindstone and get to work. Like, I'm just super impressed with you.
Thank you. And I definitely, it's been definitely eye-opening, like a lot of mental clicks happening along the way that, you know, it's funny when you look at the calendar, well, I shouldn't even say look, when you hear about the calendar, you hear people talking about the X's and O's, it's like, that's so simple. You know, like, okay, whatever, Jordan, like X's and O's, okay. And then you start doing it and it's like, you start doing it and then you're like, dang, these are pissing me off. Like, and then you're like, okay, let me just, I'm just going to be a student. I'm going to be a student and really absorb what you and Susan are preaching and just like really consume it all in. And you're right. Like something that simple, did we get disconnected for a second?
No.
Okay. I just lost my train of thought, but something so simple, you know, really shows that you can make gradual effort. And that alone is a huge step to be able to be like humble enough to be like, you know what, I am going to take these X's and O's seriously. Mm. And it was a really big eye opener for me. And it really showed, you know, like you guys always preach about consistency is really the key. And not having like a perfect plan, it like just keep on going and then fine tuning along the way. So,
you know, the consistency calendar, I'm almost embarrassed at how many years it took me to come up with that idea. But the whole reason I came up with it is because any coach will tell you that the biggest reason their clients don't fail is consistency. Like any coach, like that's well known. And if you look in the research, it becomes even more obvious because people consistently inaccurately rate their consistency. They consistently inaccurately rate how consistent they're being. This is very clear. And the interesting thing about it is they're almost never doing it deliberately. Like they're almost never lying. Because when I think of lying, I think they're deliberately trying to manipulate you, or to, like, they know how consistent they're being or inconsistent they're being, but then they're going to lie about it. They're not lying because they don't actually know. They're just, their estimation is incorrect. Right. And so I remember when I came up with it, I was like, how can we show people, like, how can I tell someone they're being inconsistent without me telling them they're being inconsistent? Because as soon as you say you're not being consistent, they get defensive. They get upset. Screw you. You don't know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And so I started this with clients just being like, I need you to track this every day. And then we can look at it. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, we look at this on a month to month basis and you can track the percentage consistency. And then they're like, oh, I was 48% consistent. No wonder I didn't lose as much weight as so-and-so, because they were way more consistent than I was. Right. And I found it so funny, because you always have the people who are like, well, how come so-and-so can eat whatever they want? But as soon as, like, I have something, like, I gain a lot of weight, it's like, well, the reality is, maybe in front of you 3 to 4 times a month or whatever, they're having a treat, but the rest of the time they're being super consistent, whereas you are not being nearly as consistent as you think you are, which then leads to the lack of progress. So yeah, the consistency calendar, I think you're right. A lot of people hear like X's nose, like, all right, that's a cool idea. But once you have it out in front of you, it's like, oh my, because people look at the scale as the sole determinant of progress, which, like, it's not inherently bad, but you can't control what the scale does on a day-to-day basis. The only thing you can control is your consistency. That is it. It's the sole thing you have control over. And when you actually wrap your head around that and then take control of it, it's crazy the progress that comes, just as you've clearly shown.
And yeah, and it's, and I love the simplicity of it, because I, you know, I've downloaded consistency apps before even joining the Inner Circle. And, you know, it'd be like these checklists of things, but then, you know, if you're trying to get in shape and you don't know, like, I think the most embarrassing part as a former athlete and then now is admitting, like, I don't even know where to start. Right. Mm-hmm. So the consistency, like, apps that I've downloaded in the past, you'd have like this linear view of a checklist of like, okay, well, I guess drink 4 gallons or not 4 gallons. I'm sorry. Drink a gallon of water a day. Take my vitamins. Like, I remember having this list of things, but it could quickly turn into 6, 7, 8, you know,
it's too number much
of things. And then it's too much. And then you get overwhelmed and it's like, why does this feel so impossible? But that's where I think really focusing in on the X's and O's on the calendar have really shown, you know, that plus, you know, taking progress pictures, doing the measurements, and doing the weigh-ins every day, because part, you know, I think it was halfway through July was when the body weight tracker was launched. Game changer. Like, good. You know, I could see the fluctuations, and it was genuinely interesting. It wasn't overwhelming.
Good.
And I just love seeing that view. Because I'm a very analytical person, so I can see, you know, oh, I did have this type of meal this day. I should expect to see a spike. Oh, yes, I did see a spike, probably because of sodium. And then I can narrow down, you know, am I sensitive to sodium? Am I sensitive to a huge carb meal?
Yes.
Should I have carbs in the morning? So it's like, it's just this little snowball effect of, you know, being able to grow using these tools, as simple as they may sound, they are actually, like, you know, help you, you know, move towards your goal in the right direction. So huge fan, love it. It's been great. Like, every morning, like, I used to be the person that would check, you know, Facebook, Instagram, the news every morning. No way. I'm like checking an Inner Circle. I'm logging my weight. Like, that's the first thing I do every morning. And it's not like scary anymore. It's not sad. So
it's like a positive part of your day. Cause it's collecting data is really what it boils down to. And I feel like at this point, I'm almost overusing that phrase, but that's what it is. Like, am I sensitive to sodium? Like, am I sensitive to a high carb meal? Like, what do I know is going to affect my weight on a certain day? Like, and knowing that just because my weight might fluctuate up, irrelevant to my emotions, like, that doesn't mean anything bad. I'm just collecting more data. The more data you have, the more knowledgeable you are. It's like any person with the least bit of intelligence would never invest in a company, would invest their own money in a company unless they had a lot of data on that company.
Yes.
right? But a lot of people are investing a tremendous amount of emotion into their scale weight when they have zero knowledge of what their weight is doing or why it's fluctuating. It's like, stop investing so much in it until you, and once you realize how it works through collecting all this data, the emotion is much easier to control.
And it's, and it kind of desensitizes, I don't know if that's the right word, but
I think it is.
Like
yeah.
You said, it, like about the scale or like things not fitting. Like, it's so funny. You know, I was feeling really pumped up after week two of the body weight challenge. Right. And I was like, you know, I was able to do movements. And so I went to go get a new swimsuit. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get a, you know, a bikini. I haven't worn one of those in years. Bad move. Shouldn't have done that. You know, then I tried it on. I swear to God, I looked like a, you know, a Christmas ham, just like all stuffed in this freaking bikini. And I was laughing. I laughed so hard. And my husband was like, he's like, are you okay? And I was like, I was kind of tickled to death because it was like funny. It wasn't like this, like a sobbing moment where I was just going to ball up and cry for weeks on end. It was just like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, it's just like, whatever. I'll just get, you know, a different swimsuit. And it was, I just moved on with my day. And before, you know, it would have affected me. But now being able to laugh about it, it's like, okay, maybe give it a couple more months, you know, and then.
You just have such an optimistic, lighthearted way about it, which I think is one of the reasons why you're being so successful, because you don't take it too seriously, right? Like, you're not so hard on yourself. Like, what's the point? What's the point? Like, life is so, what's the point? Life is so short. Why be so damn hard on yourself? If you can't laugh at yourself, what are you doing?
Yes. I mean, that's what, laughter is like the best medicine. And just being able to laugh has been awesome. Like, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but my husband's doing the personal training with me as well. So we do similar workouts, but, well, we actually do the same workout, but his is tailored different to weight. And it's funny because we will just get murdered in a workout and then we'll both like be dying. And it's like, well, we still got to be parents. So who's going to carry our daughter to the car, you know, like rock, paper, scissors, you know, like I just did what you just did. And we're able to laugh about it. But along the way, you know, we're kind of pissed at ourselves, because as we're doing these simple things, you know, you convince yourself it's hard, right? Mm-hmm. When you let yourself go and you let time go by, you convince yourself that it's nearly impossible, because it's gotta be hard, right? I've spent so much time, you know, thinking about it, overanalyzing it, whatever. And you convince yourself like, okay, I can't, it's too difficult. But when you start doing all these little movements, you're like, oh man, I was wrong. All it really is a bunch of little things. Right. And that's where you kind of get pissed, because it's like, you mean to tell me I could have been doing this all along? And, but you know, you live and you learn, and it's fun. So we just laugh about it. It's been fun, to kind of, pick on each other about our workout. So
it sounds like you have a great partnership, some really good, some banter, right? Back and forth, which makes it more fun, right? It's, mm-hmm. If you take this stuff too seriously, you're going to burn out. You're going to burn out. So talk to me, what, going forward, what are your thoughts? What can I help you with? Let's go from there.
Okay. So I have so many questions, but I'm just going to go top to bottom from the stuff that I have.
One by one.
Is muscle memory a real thing?
Tell me what you mean by muscle memory.
So, progressive overload, the stuff that I'm doing, the movements that I'm doing, I notice like I'm still a big girl, but I'm able to do the things, and I'm able to like before, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, I could not get up from the ground very gracefully. And now like we're doing combative get-ups to, you know, like that's a game in our house that we're starting. Like the only way to get up from the floor is a combative get-up.
I love
So I'm noticing, you know, things, and like, obviously like dropping inches, feeling muscle grow back.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just because I'm doing the right thing, or is like, or.
Like things that you've done before, there is zero question that if you've developed a skill, earlier on in life, and then you let that skill dwindle. When you come back to it, it is infinitely easier to learn than if you had never done it before. So for example, when I first started doing the splits recently, one of the first things that my coach asked me was, he was like, were you ever able to do the splits? And I was like, yes, when I was a kid, when I was younger and I was doing wrestling and gymnastics and taekwondo, I could penis to ground splits all day, no problem. And he was like, if you could do it back then, it's going to be way easier for you now. And he said, I've made the fastest splits progress he's ever seen with anybody. And he very much attributes it to me having been able to do it in the past. I don't think it's as much about muscle memory as much as it is about neurological memory, if that makes sense, or neuromuscular memory might be a more accurate way to put it, because really the brain controls everything. Like the brain nervous system controls everything. So once you've done something, and once you've made something, the movement patterns are ingrained, the neurological patterns are ingrained, the neuromuscular patterns are ingrained, it's significantly easier to do it again, without question. We see this all the time in sports with young kids. If you see a young kid, it's why when I hopefully become a parent, the first sport I'm going to put my kids in is gymnastics, because gymnastics is one of those things where it helps with everything. It helps with hand-eye coordination. It helps with balance. It helps with proprioception. It helps with kinesthetic awareness, with everything. And it really sets a great foundation for all movement and sports. So if you do something when you're younger, whether it's a kid or even as a teenager or whatever, later in life, it's going to be way easier for you to get it back.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, my next question is, creatine supplements for women whose primary goal is fat loss and secondary goal is strength. I've seen chatter about women taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it recommended or is it not recommended?
Had you asked me this 2 to 3 years ago, I would have said if the primary goal is fat loss and secondary goal is strength, I would have said it's not necessary. And I would have even potentially said maybe not even worth it. Now, with newer research coming out, I would say it's probably beneficial. Beneficial does not mean necessary, nor does it mean essential, but it's actually pretty incredible, all of the research that's coming out around creatine, showing not only benefits for muscle strength, but also like there are cognitive benefits associated with it. There are many performance benefits associated with it. The health risks are none, which is pretty crazy. The two most researched supplements that I've found on the internet are fish oil and creatine. Though they're the two, they have the most research around those supplements, which, by the way, is one of the reasons why those supplements are among the least expensive, because they're the most researched and most effective, and so many people sell them. And now, so it's like they can't make up too many crazy claims about them. A lot of the supplements that are like in the glass cases in the supplement stores that are overpriced that you can only get if you have the key, those are the ones that like don't have that much research behind them. And so people just make up these random claims and they can make them seem more like miracle drugs than anything else. We know fish oil and creatine aren't miracle drugs. We do know that they are very, very effective, and we do know that they have tremendous health benefits. So the one thing to understand about creatine is there is a potential for a little bit of water retention. Now, what that means is if you told me, hey, I'm looking to step on stage, like for example, if I had never taken creatine before, and or if I was not currently taking creatine when I started my weight loss cut for jiu-jitsu, I would not have started taking creatine because I could have held on to a little bit more water, which would have made me weigh more, which wouldn't be good for my weigh-in for that specific competition. Because you're not worried about the scale per se, you're more worried about your body fat, I wouldn't worry about it, right? Like you losing body fat and losing and holding a little bit of water from creatine, those are irrelevant. Like it's not going to make a difference. It might make the scale spike up a little bit,
right?
But it's just water, and that's totally fine. And that oftentimes comes with creatine monohydrate. I take a micronized creatine. Creatine monohydrate is generally a little bit less expensive. It's the one that's most researched. For me, though, and for there are a fair number of people who they get a little bit of stomach upset with creatine monohydrate, just like slightly, not everyone, but some people, myself included, just like sort of makes you feel a little bit nauseous. Micronized creatine, slightly more expensive, no issues with the stomach, and also you don't really get the extra water weight. So that's what I take. And so if you want to avoid the water weight, want to avoid the potential stomach upset, I would say micronized creatine.
Okay. Yeah, because my husband takes it. And I think I told you in the last podcast that he had the back injury. He broke his back. Scar on his spine. But he had muscle atrophy. So it kind of caved in on his lower back. Jeez. But now since he's working out and he's taking creatine, you're starting to see the muscle. And I mean, he's looking,
Let's go.
He's taking creatine. And then he's like, oh, women aren't supposed to take creatine.
No. That's
I'm
going to
ask him.
I love that he's making progress. Mm-hmm. Women can have, do you ever eat red meat?
Yes.
If you eat red meat, then you're getting creatine. Creatine occurs naturally in foods. I don't think you should be eating red meat for the creatine, for that purpose. But it's always funny to me when people are like, no, women shouldn't take creatine. I'm like, do you think women are allowed, should be able to eat red meat? It's like, yeah, sure. Okay. Well, then they're having creatine. It's naturally occurring in food. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. And I would say there are actually many benefits for women taking creatine. So yeah, I mean, how's your blood pressure? Is your blood pressure fine?
Perfect.
Yeah. Then you're good. The one time I recommend speaking to someone's doctors if they do have high blood pressure, it's worth discussing with them. But otherwise, if your blood pressure is fine, you should be totally fine.
Okay, perfect. You said micronized creatine?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. All right. So my X days in July were 3 plates, 2 snacks, and training. Is that too simple of a goal?
No. I mean, did it work?
Yeah.
I'd say it worked really well.
I posted in the inner circle because, on non-training days, which could be 2 to 3 days, or I mean 2 days a week, when my trainer says to rest, but it's like, I don't want to, what is rest? So then that's where I get he called me out, he actually said, take a 3-day weekend rest. And I looked at him and I kind of frowned and he was like, you are a overtrained injury waiting to happen. And I kind of got butthurt about it. I was like, no, I'm not. It's like, what are you talking about? He's just like, relax, take the weekend, go for a walk with each other. And I was just like, okay. Yeah,
I agree with him. I agree because, and you mentioned, you alluded to this earlier. You said something like you go all in, you get really hyped up about it.
Yep.
That's the potential issue is the burnout, burnout that comes with it, the potential injury that comes with it. I understand, you're the quintessence of action leads to results, results lead to motivation, motivation leads to more action, right? So you took action, you've seen amazing results, now you're fucking motivated. You are in the peak. It's not going to last.
Right.
It will not last. I would love to say that it would. I wish I could say, you'll be motivated forever. You're not. and I would rather you know that you can stay at a several days a week of workouts with walking on your off days and be totally fine. Because if you start going every single day doing too much and then the lack of motivation hits, then you're going to be you're going to feel like a failure. You're going to feel like, well, I'm not doing enough. Then you're going to feel like you're going to go back in progress. Always, I'd start with less and progressively work up. So yes, sure. Start with, I think what you're doing right now is literally perfect, and take your coach's advice, take those rest days, go on walks. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But if you start building the habit of feeling like you need to be going crazy every day, it's going to do more harm than good long run.
Right. Well, cause I was thinking, obviously the walks, but I think I did a 15 minute jump rope one day. Or whatever, nothing lifting, nothing crazy. I think one day I did try to lift and I was like, oh, I'm too tired. I don't want to. Because by the end of the week, I'm pretty all right, I'm ready for the weekend. But then what does an O day look like? Because, if I'm still, doing an active recovery, is that an O day? It is?
No.
Okay.
An O day is if you don't do what you're supposed to do. And right, like an O day is if like you don't get your 3 plates, 2 snacks, like maybe you have like you have 3 plates, 2 snacks, but then you have, I don't know, 7 drinks. Right. It's like, okay, well, that's an O day, right? So okay. So what constitutes an X for you?
3 plates and training. 3 plates, 2 snacks and training. And I do that religiously as of right now.
So, okay, cool. So on the days in which you're supposed to train, an X is 3 plates, 2 snacks and training. On the days in which you're supposed to have a rest day, the X is the 3 plates, 2 snacks. And that's it.
So then what if I, so then do you ever have O days?
Like, is that simple? What's so funny about, you're like, well, this is pretty fucking easy. Like, right? Is that, that's like, well, yeah, that's what I want.
Like, do you have any O days? Because then my calendar would be, I mean, maybe it wouldn't be if I did, you know, drink one weekend. I don't know. I don't ever drink. I don't. Well,
you're allowed to have drinks, but like if, listen, O days, I mean, it sounds like you've got your training down pat, right? It sounds like you're crushing your training. And it also sounds like you're crushing your nutrition. So, of course, you're going to see X's all over that fucking calendar because, like, you're crushing it, right? It's like, this is what I want it to be outrageously easy for you to get your X's.
Okay.
It's fucking working. Like, there's, like, there's no reason to fix it if it's not broken, right? You're crushing it. I would way rather it be too easy than too hard. Because let me ask you this. Do you think you could sustain this for 6 months?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that but answer then, tells me everything I need to know.
I guess that just pisses me off because you're meaning to tell me that I gained 100 pounds because I didn't do 3 plates and 2 snacks and train 30 minutes a day.
Over how many years? Yeah. It's great. Isn't it crazy? It's the simple.
Yeah.
But now your story gets so much cooler, right? Because you gained 100 pounds, da, 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 da. Now you're losing it and you're feeling great. And it's just another part of your life. It's another story. It's another chapter in your book. It makes it cool. And then you can pass this along to your children and you can share it with them and you can make their lives better. It's like, yeah, you can be like, damn, how in the hell did I let that happen? But you going through this makes you a stronger person and it's going to make your kids stronger, very proud of you. It's going to make your husband proud of you. Your relationship will probably be stronger because of it. So I would continue to look at it from that positive perspective.
Okay. Yes. Okay. You're right. It's like, have you ever seen Zoolander before?
One of my favorite movies. So good.
And you know how it's like, it's so simple. It's like,
yeah.
That's how I feel it's right
inside
now.
Inside the computer.
It's just 3 plates and 2 snacks. That's it.
I think one of my favorite lines in that movie, like I can't even think about it without laughing, is when she was like, I'm bulimic. And he just looks at her with that, like the crazy look. And he's like, you can read minds.
I love that movie so much.
Such, I just, oh, because like you think he's about to say something comforting and sweet, and it's like, you can read minds.
My husband and I greet each other like, hello, you know. We love movies in our house, man. We're goofy. All right, okay, moving on. I love that movie so much. Okay, so bright lines for non-training days. So I'm averaging about 7,000, 8,000 steps a day, Monday through Friday, you know, during my training week. Should I shoot for 10,000 on like non-training days or just keep it cool and simple? Don't fix what's broken.
Don't fix it if it's not broken, but I would just keep a minimum number of steps. So if your minimum should be 7,000. And then if you want to go more, like if you want to challenge yourself, cool, go for it. You can go 7 to 10,000. You can make a range, 7 to 10,000. But I don't think at this stage it makes sense to be like, you've got to up on your rest day. Like, it's working, and it's working very quickly, and it's working very sustainably. So in my mind, like, why fix it if it's not broken? By all means, if you want to make a range of 7 to 10, and in your own head, just be like, all right, I'm going to get 10 on, like, a couple of these days, go for it. But it's not essential.
Okay. So the overtraining injury, what does that, or like, who's at risk and what does it look like? I know I'm at risk because just sheer mental kind of go hard kind of mentality. I'm not saying that's the right thing. That's just who I am.
Yep.
So what does that look like? Like, if, does that look like me adding more to my plate than what I already have now?
What does an overtraining injury look like?
Yeah. Like, I mean, cause I have had some discomforts, you know, obviously with training so hard. And we train barefoot. So I'm like, you know, feeling muscles in my feet that I've never felt before.
Oh, isn't it crazy? The small muscles in your foot that, they can, you, especially training barefoot, you really start.
Game changer. We train on the mat. So, and like, you know, he'll bring the weights on the mat and we'll,
I love do that.
It's amazing. And, you know, he kind of made me laugh the first day, but he was like, you know, you're one of the most athletic people that I'm training right now. And I kind of laughed and I was like, well, then you're not training that many athletic people, you know what I mean? And he was like, no, you got the movements down, like for your size, like you're doing it really well. And I was like, okay, well, that's really reassuring. But he was like, but remember that your mind may be somewhere further than when your body is, and to keep those in sync. So, you know, when, like I said earlier, he said that I got a little butt hurt, but like, this is where I guess, like, do I set a bright line before adding something new to my routine, or like, how do I navigate that? Cause you know, the more weight that I lose, you know, I have been noticing differences, like, you know, my joints are achy, but they feel stronger, you know, cause I'm losing the weight. Do I set a bright line that says, you know, give yourself X amount of time before changing up your routine, or, you know,
This is a great question. It is very individual. I'm going to try and outline some guidelines, just some general guidelines to follow. I think the most important is for you to be aware of your body. Like, you have to, if you start to feel your shoulders start to give you some trouble, your elbows are start to be a little bit like achy, your knees, your hips, like your back, I would rather you take a full day off, a full 2 days off, a full 3 days off. If in your head you're like, it doesn't feel good, either you can go in and you have to enforce lighter weight and just go through the movements, or take that day off.
Okay. And
you learn this as you go. Like, this is a learned thing. Unfortunately, part of doing any sport, and that includes strength training, is injury. No one's ever done a sport or lifted weights for a very long period of time without ever getting hurt, right? I don't care if it's soccer. I don't care if it's baseball. I don't care if it's jujitsu. I don't care if it's just strength training. I don't care if it's Pilates. Sometimes you get hurt. Like, it just happens. It's part of it. The difference is the benefits of doing these things far outweigh the potential costs, right? The potential risks. So make sure that you're listening to your body. And speaking from personal experience, if you feel like my shoulder is getting a little bit pinchy, my back is a little bit achy, my hip, this, I would rather you either take the day off or just get your ego out of the room and just go slow and steady, reduce the weight and go through the movements. Because sometimes it can be nice to just go through the movements, even if you're not lifting weights, simply for the habit of going. Just because you're there, you feel better mentally and emotionally, maybe get a little bit of a sweat going. But from personal experience, doing some very stupid things as a young lifter, like years ago, I would rather you take the day and go very, very light and stay healthy than to try and do what you're doing before and then put yourself out for 6 weeks. Like, that sucks. And always keep that in mind. I do this, it's so funny what I do now versus what I do when I was younger. I have no issue now, whether I'm in the gym, whether I'm at jiu-jitsu, whatever it is, just being like calling it early or completely changing my plan in order to make sure I can still go to the gym the next day, right?
Right, okay.
Now my thought process is always, am I gonna be able to come here tomorrow? Whereas before, my thought process was, am I gonna be able to get a new personal record today? And that's where people get hurt. When all you're focused on is getting more and more and more today, you're going to get hurt. But when you're focused on making sure you can come back tomorrow, the ego's out of the room. Because really, coming back tomorrow is the most important. We're not trying to set any records. We're just trying to be healthier and more fit. So always pay. This is super general, but always pay attention to your body, how it's feeling, and make sure your choice is going to allow you to come back tomorrow in the gym. That's for sure number one. I would say try and stick with the program for at least like 4 to 6 weeks. It sounds like you have a great coach. It sounds like I don't know, but I would try and stick with the same program for 4 to 6 weeks. Within those 4 to 6 weeks, slowly, progressively overloading. But remember, progressive overload doesn't just mean adding weight to the bar, right? It doesn't just mean lifting a heavier dumbbell, lifting a heavier barbell. It's progressive overload could be using the same weight, but better technique. Progressive overload could be instead of doing more weight, you could do the same weight for a couple more repetitions. Progressive overload could be improving your range of motion, using a slightly bigger range of motion. There are many ways to progressively overload outside of simply lifting more weight. And when you learn this, you also reduce the risk of injury, right? Because if always in your mind, like, oh, last week I used 25, then this week I need to use 30, and then the next week I need to use 35. It's like, that's not accurate. If you go up 5 pounds or 10 pounds every week, you're going to max out the dumbbell rack within a matter of weeks. Like, it doesn't, it's going to be very hard to do that. No one's ever maxed out the dumbbell rack in a matter of a week. Like, you can't expect to add weight to your lifts every single week or even every single month. After a base level of strength is built, it takes a long time, which is why these other methods of progressive overload are super important to keep in mind. And which is why, like, for 4 to 6 weeks, you keep the same program. Maybe week one you use, and I don't know, let's say we're talking about a dumbbell row. Week one, you use 25 pounds, you do it for 8 reps. Week two, you use 25 pounds, you do it for 10 reps. Week three, you use 30 pounds, do it for 8 reps. Week four, you use 30 pounds, you do it for 10 reps. Week five, you do 35 pounds, do it for 8 reps. Week six, you use 35 pounds, do it for 10 reps. Cool, then your new program. Start over, and you have a new technique, you have a new program, but the total weight you added was 10 pounds, but you progressively overloaded it for 6 weeks straight. Does that make sense?
Yes, makes perfect sense. Okay. So then this kind of goes into transitioning between programs. Like I told you, I'm following that 12-week program with my trainer.
Yep.
You know, I kind of want to, you know, sign back up, like, you know, sign another or do another training session with him again. But, you know, I'm getting into the point where mentally I've never been here before. Like, where I am today mentally, I've never been here. And I know without a shadow of doubt that I'm going to get to my goal. But what the hell happens after that? Like, do I learn how to build my own program? So I just follow the inner circle? Like, now what?
You know? Yeah. So this is a great question. It really depends on what you're interested in and what you're passionate about, right? So that's really what it depends on. There are many people who've been in the inner circle since the day it started, and who, before they were in the inner circle, they're my one-on-one clients. And these people, they could have hundreds of programs from me that they could do over the years. They don't have to be in the inner circle anymore, but they like having a new program every month that they trust who designed it. They trust the program design. They like the program design, and they don't have to do any thinking. They just know, they open up their app, they click the workout of that month, and they follow it, and they're good to go. And that's just because, like, they don't want to think about program design. They just, like, and it's worth $24.99 a month for them to do that. That's what they do. Other people, once they get to a certain point, they're like, I want to figure out how to do this on my own. It's sort of like, I'll give you another example. You could bring your car to the shop, right? And have a mechanic fix your car. Right. And you could pay them anytime your car has a malfunction, anytime your car is an issue, you could go to the shop and pay them, or you could learn how to do it on your own. You could Google it, you could YouTube it, you could take courses on how to fix your own car. Basically, you're trying to figure out, is it worth it for you to learn that on your own and then spend the time doing that? Or is it worth it for you to pay someone else to do it for you? And that's what you have to weigh the cost and benefit of. So for me, I'm going to pay someone to fix my car because I know literally nothing about cars. And I also don't really have an interest in it. That's just me personally. When it comes to strength training, like, actually, I still pay coaches to do my programming all the time because I learn every time I hire another coach. Every time I hire another coach, like, I'm learning a lot from this flexibility coach. I've learned a lot when I hired bodybuilding coaches. Like, I always hire coaches because I always learn from it. But if I was going to do a powerlifting meet, I'd design my own program because I think I'm the best in the world at designing powerlifting programs. So but that also took me 10 years to do, like, to get that good at designing powerlifting based programs. So it's 100% based on what do you want to do? What are you interested in? If you want to take the time to learn program design, hell yeah, go for it. But if you just want a great program to follow, then go to your coach, do the inner circle, whatever you want.
Well, then how does one even get into program design? Like, because I come from a very technical IT background. So, like, seeing the body as like a computer in a weird way, it's like, okay, now this is all clicking. And now I'm like really jacked up and interested. But now I'm like, okay, I'm like, need to calm down because, you know, I'm buying all these books. And I'm like, what do I do with these
books? What books did you get?
I got Glute Lab by,
By
Brett Contreras. Yep. Yeah. And just learning through that, that's like one of my questions later on down. And then I got that Jiu-Jitsu University book.
Great book. Yeah.
And so those are my two so far. And Susan's book. I just ordered Susan's.
Oh, amazing. That's awesome. That's a great book as well. So program design is like, it's an art form. I really look at it like art. In the same way I look at jujitsu as art, right? It's poetry in motion is like the way I look at it. Program design is like art because the way I look at it is there's so many aspects of program design. It's not just about any just exercises and sets and reps. It's about the individual. It's about their individual needs, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally, right? Like two people might present exactly the same in terms of physicality and in terms of their conditioning levels, in terms of their strength. But if one is very shy in the gym and one is like very extroverted and loves being in there, I'm going to program differently because they're going to respond differently based on what I'm having them doing, where in the gym it is. Like there's so many aspects, their mobility, their flexibility comes into it, their strength levels, their history in the gym, their current strength, their previous strength. Like there's so many aspects that come into play. So it's a lot to get into. I'll say a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I think the two best books that anyone could start to get, I actually have an entire article on this when I used to write long form articles on my website. If you Google search strength and the best books for strength and conditioning coaches, you're going to find an article that comes up from my website, sciatfitness.com. I think it's titled like the 8 best books for strength and conditioning coaches. My personal favorite books are in there. I think the two best ones that you could get are number one, Starting Strength by Mark Rippetoe. This is a very, very, very basic introductory book towards program design. But again, just like, you know, the consistency calendar is very basic and simple. It works really, really well. I think Starting Strength, there are things in it that I disagree with, notably the nutrition advice. Do not even read the nutrition section because it's awful. But the strength training program design and Starting Strength is, I think, the place where everyone should begin in terms of their program design, learning program design. After that, the next one I would recommend is Practical Programming, and that is also by Mark Rippetoe. There are things I disagree with him on. I disagree with him on certain things in regard to technique of certain exercises. He can be very, very dogmatic in certain ways. But I think he's done the best job of outlining and expressing the ways that you should begin understanding program design. So Starting Strength, number one. Practical Programming, number two. What I know as like the most comprehensive long form article ever written on program design. If you Google search strength training program design, Jordan Syatt, my article is going to come right up. It is a long article that I wrote. I think it must have been 2015 or something. Long discussion of many considerations that need to be taken into place when you're designing a strength program. That's where I would begin. Starting Strength, Practical Programming, and my article, I think, are the best places to begin. From there are many different routes you can go, because what you're going to start to notice is strength training program design changes based on the individual. and it changes based on the individual's goals and the demands of whatever it is they're training for. So the way I train now, my strength train now, is very different than how I strength trained when I was training competitively powerlifting. Interestingly, from the outside, it might not look that different to you because I'm still squatting, I'm still deadlifting, I'm still doing all that stuff. What really changes is the small details day to day that if you just looked at a program, most people just look at the exercise and the sets and reps. That's most of what they look at, but it's the details that make a big difference. How much weight are you lifting? For how many sets and reps? How much rest are you taking? The rest dictates a lot about the goal that you have. Is it a 75 second rest or is it a 3 minute rest? Big differences in the goal you're trying to achieve. What does your accessory work look like? Do you have like 3 exercises? Do you have 5 exercises? Why so many exercises? Why so few exercises? How many times a week are you training? Like it goes on and on, and you could really dive down a deep rabbit hole, which it sounds like you're super interested in. And so I would say chase that interest, go for it. Okay. But for me personally, it's also why I always have a coach. I have a jiu-jitsu coach and I have a flexibility coach right now. I pay them because they know more than I do about those things. I've hired bodybuilding coaches, Paul Carter, I've hired Brian Cron, because that's not my specialty. Bodybuilding, people assume bodybuilding and powerlifting, oh, it's all the same. It's not the same. So when it comes to powerlifting, I think the things I am best at are strength training program designed for powerlifting specifically, but also just for general population, everyday people who want to get stronger, get more defined, and lose body fat. I think I'm candidly the best in the world at both of those. If I didn't think that I was the best in the world at both of those, then it might sound cocky, but I very much believe it. That's just, I don't know anyone who does it better than I do in terms of both of those things. But those are just two tiny things compared to the overarching world of strength and conditioning. I'm definitely not the best for jiu-jitsu strength training program design yet. I'm working towards it. I'm definitely not the best for bodybuilding at all. Nowhere close. Not for physique competitions. Hell no. Definitely not the best for flexibility. No, absolutely not. And I never will be because I'm not that interested in that thing. No way for endurance events like marathon training, swimming, any of that, like strength training program design for that stuff. I know nothing about that. So the more you get into it, the more you realize it never ends. There's always more to learn. And you could even think about in terms of, there's a great book by Tudor Bompa, Strength Training Program Design for Sports. And he does a really wonderful job. That book is listed in the article I mentioned about like the 8 best books for strength and conditioning coaches. He does a really interesting job of talking about program design, sport-specific program design, but also based around how to peak your athletes for strength training based on, for example, you look at an Olympic athlete. We're in the Olympics right now. These athletes, their training programs started being designed 4 years ago for the Olympics. It's like and it's not just peaking for the Olympics, but you have to have periods of time you're peaking for the world championships every year. You're peaking for different competitions in between. So he has a really unique take on how to continue to improve your athletes year over year, improve them throughout the off seasons, how to train them during the on season when they're actually competing. I mean, it's a whole world that you could spend your entire life on, and there's no way you have enough time in your life to master all of it. Right. But you do have enough time to master a couple of things, which is like, that's what I would much rather be a master of one or two things than to be like, okay at a bunch of things.
Okay. Yeah.
Like it totally Bruce makes Lee, sense. Right? Like the person who practices one kick 10,000 times is infinitely better than the person who practices 10,000 kicks one time.
Yeah. No, that definitely makes sense. Yeah, because I was just thinking, you know, I'm really into this stuff, but I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about it to know where I'd want to go and that, like, what I'd want to do with it. Because, you know, I do have that upbeat energy, and I really do like to, you know, inspire and, you know, and do like, you know, I am an athlete, so I don't know. I do think that's a good starting step, because, you know, I see myself getting caught in these Reddit rabbit holes and Instagram and like looking at all these things, and I'm like,
yeah,
I just need to hone it in. Okay, cool.
I would, the Instagram age has ruined strength and conditioning, but I think it's made it more difficult for people trying to get into it on a science-based level to know where to go.
Yeah.
Before Instagram, your only option was to read books or like go to really long form articles. Now on Instagram, you just see all these quick posts, and like you can't understand strength training program design from a quick post. You can't. Even if you get 100 of those posts, it's just not enough. I would say get off Instagram. You don't have to delete your account. But if you want to learn strength training program design, don't go to Instagram. Don't go to Reddit. Get these books, these several hundred page books, and study and read. Like the books in that article I outlined, my long form article, Starting Strength and Practical Programming, just read and then put it into practice. And then take those and compare them to my programming in the Inner Circle. And then you can start to and compare them to your coach's programming, and you'll start to see, like, notice similarities or difference. If you have any questions, hey, why did you program 5 reps for this, but then 12 reps for this? How come you supersetted this? And I'm happy to talk to you about it. I think that's important questions to have, and it's important to discuss them.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. Next question was goal setting. So what are some good functional goals to have, like as a baseline athlete, getting back into the groove, you know, in terms of agility, stability, flexibility? What are some good, like, functional goals? I guess, like, I know getting up with no hands has been a goal for me personally.
Yep. I love that. Yeah.
Recently my coach made us jump over, one of the workouts was jump over a heavy bag, which was like a mind fuck for me. I couldn't like get myself to do it. And then finally I did it, cause you would jump over and then start immediately doing burpees. And I kept stepping, and, you know, finally I made the jump over, and I was actually kind of shocked that I was able to bring my weight up and over. But I loved those little things, those little functional goals. So, like, do you have any ideas of good functional goals to set, so like I can just add them in my day to have fun, you know?
Yeah. So do you want these specifically for jujitsu? I know you were saying you want to get into jujitsu. Like, do you want some functional goals for jujitsu or just in general?
Both. Jujitsu would be cool too, because I'm doing MMA style workouts or influenced workouts.
Yeah. So, here's what I think. I think off the bat, a really good one is 10 great push-ups, like 10 like chest to floor push-ups. I don't know if you can do that yet or not. Can you do that or no? Not right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not pretty. It's not a full break the plane, but, you know, I am doing push-ups. You're getting way better than they.
Perfect. I would definitely work towards that, breaking the plane. And you can progressively overload that just by breaking the plane, right? Breaking the plane, getting to 10 of those. I think that's a really good a baseline. Bear crawls.
I can do those now, Jordan.
Let's go.
I'm sorry. Like, when I did the body weight, we did the lateral. I couldn't do 8 of them in the body. Like, you know, you had 8 one side, 8 the other. I'm doing bear crawls down and back on the mat 6 times.
Wow. So,
I can still add those in. I mean, it's not pretty, but like my last workout, crushed it, was bear crawls, inchworms, crab walks. I mean, it was a brutal workout. But
I mean, it sounds like you're doing great. I was going to say a lateral bear crawl, essentially doing like back and forth for 2 minutes straight.
Okay.
So if you can maintain it for 2 minutes straight without putting your knees down, not going fast, nice and slow and very controlled for 2 minutes straight, down and back, down and back, down and back. If you can do a bear crawl for 2 minutes straight, that's like more towards advanced. For like, you could start off with 1 minute straight. But getting towards 2 minutes, conditioning would be great. Core stability would be great. Your shoulder stability is going to be improved from that. Like, I would say that's a great goal to work towards. Okay. I would say working towards being able to do the lateral jumps over the bag, like 5 per side, is a great one. Working towards that, like, you don't have to go pop, 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 pop. Doesn't have to be super fast, but first jump, absorb the force, land strong and absorb it, pause, jump back the other way, land it, absorb it, control. I don't need you to be super fast with it yet. Eventually, working towards, as you land, then you rebound immediately and go back. So back and back and back and back. Does that make sense? I want you to just jump, hold it, stick the landing like in gymnastics, you stick it, hold, re-jump, then go to the other side, right? That five per side is a really good goal to work towards. Doing that laterally and also doing that front, you don't have to jump backwards, but jumping forwards, turn around, jump forwards, turn around, jump forwards, doing front for some agility-based goals, for some plyometric style goals, I think that's wonderful. I would say start working towards those. I think that's wonderful.
Okay. And are those like things that I can add in on the day that won't be overtraining?
Yes. Like those? Yes.
Okay.
You could do those on your quote unquote off days, because they're not very taxing. And you're not supposed to, I don't want you doing hundreds of reps of jumps, yeah. Right? So for example, I posted a workout I did the other day, a movement-based workout. I did leg swings, I did bear crawls, I did high knees, I did karaoke, I did a bunch of that stuff. Broad jumps, all this stuff. My broad jumps, I did 3 sets of 3.
Okay.
And I took about 3 minutes rest in between, right? Because here's the thing, and this is, you could talk about program design in this sense. The purpose of a broad jump is not to tire yourself out. The purpose of a broad jump is not to get really sweaty. The purpose of a broad jump is not to, it's not to get your heart rate up. And that's one of the reasons why I hate how a lot of CrossFit people program box jumps, because they're like 100 jumps. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Aside from asking for an Achilles tear, aside from just asking for just ruin yourself, what is the purpose of this exercise? And the purpose of a jump is to increase your explosive speed, explosive strength, and explosive power, which means you need to do 1 to 5 jumps at most per set, and you need to rest in between those reps and in between that set. So 3 sets of 3, it took me about 7 minutes to do 3 sets of 3 broad jumps, because I would do 3 jumps, then I'd rest for a couple minutes. Then I'd do three jumps. Then I'd rest for a couple minutes. And then I'd do 3 jumps. And then I was done. It was 9 jumps. It's not that many. But if you want to get the most out of every jump, you jump and you put speed and power into it. Which, in speaking from program design, the rest period really matters. And then how you're executing the exercise really matters. If you want someone to practice a jump, it's sort of like, if you think about sprinting, all sprinting is are outrageously powerful and explosive single leg jumps. That's what sprinting is. If you're not sprinting, and let's just say you're jogging, that's sort of like you're just doing wimpy jumps. And that's fine. Like, there's a time and a place for a jog. But if you want someone to get better at sprinting, you don't have them jog. That's not right. Improving their sprinting at all. It's actually going to reinforce slower twitch muscle fiber action. It's not going to be the way they get better at sprinting. So, when you're doing these jumps, for example, when you first start, you literally, like, you probably shouldn't even be jumping forward, because that's going to be absorbing a lot of force. Just jump in place.
Yeah.
You jump in place for 2 to 3 reps, rest for 5 minutes, do a couple more jumps, 2 to 3 reps, rest for 5 minutes, 2 to 3 jumps, rest for 5 minutes, then you're done. That's the jumps for that day. And it might not feel like you're doing much, but the purpose isn't to burn calories. You don't do jumps to burn calories. You don't do jumps to get your heart rate up. You do jumps to get more athletic and more explosive. So doing this on your off that you get 9 total reps in, you're actually building in more resiliency and also helping prevent injury down the road. If you do 100 jumps, you're asking for an injury.
Okay. That makes total sense. Okay. I've got 2 more questions. So looking at a 2 to 5 year goal, right? So does it, you know, you and Susan always preach time is, you know, irrelevant as far as this goes. The goal is just to, you know, be better every day. But when do physique goals come into play? Like the Glute Lab book that I got, lots of really cool information. You already know that a lot of women are gravitating towards that. When do those come to play?
You know, I have nothing against physique-based goals. My issue comes when physique-based goals are all that you have, right? When you're in time, and again, you know, someone could be listening to this, they only have physique-based goals, they'd be like, fuck this guy, right? Like, and candidly, they're right. Who am I to say you shouldn't only have physique-based goals? From my experience, though, the people who only have physique-based goals are infinitely unhappier with their physique because it's all they're focused on. Everything is based around how they look, and that's all they think about. It's all they focus on. It's all they look at, and they get more and more and more and more critical of how they look, and they're never happy with it, and they never actually like themselves. It's like, I think having physique-based goals can be a great part of an overall balanced goal formula, but never in life does anyone want to be one-dimensional, right? Being one-dimensional is never a good thing, ever. No one's like, oh yeah, I'm one-dimensional and bragging about it. Like, you want to be multi-dimensional. But if you only have a physique-based goal, you are by nature one-dimensional in that. I would rather have some physique-based goals, some performance-based goals, right? It's like, I'd rather have a little bit of both. And that way you can be a little bit more balanced and multi-dimensional.
Okay. That makes sense. So, I mean, I could do like some of those today, like, or not today, like work those into my program.
Or or you could say, for example, let's say in Glute Lab, I haven't seen those workouts in full, but let's say one of the first exercises on one of the days is a barbell hip thrust 4x5. Which I would put money that it's got to be in there somewhere.
Sounds familiar.
You could talk to your coach and you could be like, hey, do you think that we could, instead of doing this front squat, we could do a barbell hip thrust for 4x5 for my main movement, right? Swap it out. Now, because it might be more specific to if your goal is like, hey, I want to grow my glutes. Like, that would be a great way to incorporate that main movement into that program without necessarily needing to change everything.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to take that note real quick. All right. And then going back to the creatine thing, do you take creatine on your days, your off days?
Yes, I take it every day, just 5 grams, 5 grams of creatine. You don't need to do a loading phase. They have this whole loading, like where you would take 5 grams 5 times a day for 5 days in order to saturate your stores. You can do that if you want, but I have trouble enough remembering to take supplements once a day, never mind trying to take them 5 times a day for 5 days. So I just put it in my post-workout drink. And I'm good. That's it. And it doesn't have to be, it could be water. It could be a protein shake, anything you want.
Okay. And then I got that Legion supplement for your joints.
Fortify.
Because I've noticed, yes. Is there anything in addition to, because I, like I said, I'm training barefoot. So I'm feeling things like, you know, I'm losing weight. I think like a lot of pressure is being alleviated from my joints, but I'm also using them a lot more. Is there anything else that I should be adding in besides, like, you know, stretching, mobility, some of that maybe supplement that would help? Like,
so I just use Fortify as my supplement for it, which I have noticed like significant improvements, especially in my fingers and elbows from jujitsu. I would say the biggest thing is, like, from a mobility perspective, doing like mobility work that we either have in the inner circle that your coach is having you do. I've noticed, and this is completely anecdotal, I mean, there is research around the sauna and how beneficial the sauna can be. I've noticed my joints always feel better if I go in the sauna. But otherwise, just resting, making sure you're sleeping, making sure you're getting as much to the best of your ability, as much sleep as you can. 8 hours a night is great. Staying hydrated is actually super important for your joints as well. But otherwise, it's just that's basically it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all my questions. I learned a lot. I'm super jacked for the months ahead, I guess.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. I mean, do you feel like you're in a good place mentally, physically? Like, you feel confident in yourself?
Yeah, I really do. I'm really excited to see where this goes. So
I am as well. I'm super impressed with you. You've blown me away. I'm really impressed and I'm really excited for you. Please, please keep me updated with everything. Tell me how everything is going. Anything you need, I'm always here. So don't ever hesitate to reach out. And also let me know what's going on with jujitsu. I want to hear about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I will.
Amazing. Give your family my love. I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Jordan.
Bye.
Bye.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Tanya, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, please leave a 5-star review. It would mean the world to me, especially if you haven't already. And if you'd like to join the inner circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes. Have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you soon.